Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 95. We are discussing a military tribute to the Greenbrier on the PGA Tour and the KLM Open on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Steve. Nice to have some PGA Tour action back.
It's been a while, hasn't it? Oh, it's been such a long gap.
After a whole 2 weeks.
I just about managed to get everything switched over into the new system or in the new season before, basically, you get, 10 days, isn't it? Something ridiculous.
Before it all starts once again.
And they've extended the season even further with more of these full series type events.
Hmm. Yeah, there's quite a few of them, isn't there? All the way up till the third week of November. So,
well, if you think about it, usually we wouldn't have even made the Tour Championship, yeah?
No, that's right. Yeah, you can tell from the NFL chatter on Twitter that this is kind of the point we would have been on and around East Lake now, isn't it?
Absolutely. GolfBettingSystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we are available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Paul is available on Twitter at GolfBetting. I am available at Bamford Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I've recorded both shows already. I will put a link to both shows in the description box of this podcast. The podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, Buzzsprout and YouTube. And now on Google Podcasts. Now, we're asking for two simple things from you guys. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. Secondly, if you are in the growing band of YouTube listeners, please subscribe and like the show. We haven't had a review on iTunes for quite a while, so please, if you're out there and you want to, take some time. And if you do it in the next week, I will read your review out at the start of next week's show. It is a quiet time of the golfing season. We understand that. Right. You did well last week, didn't you? You did well enough. A 100-to-1 full each way place on Guido. Is it Migliozzi?
Migliozzi. Yeah, he did well. He's a talented lad, isn't he? He had a real chance as well, I think. You know, I guess whenever you get a player who kind of finishes in that, you know, very close to the top at the end of the 4 days, you can always point to a hole or a couple of holes that made or broke the week. And he was in a really strong spot going into the back nine on Saturday until he missed a tiddler on the 10th. The 10th was a tough hole, but missed a short one there and then made a mess of the 11th, which was the par 5 that actually most of the players had been birdieing that day on Saturday. So to make a snowman there rather than a kind of obligatory birdie was a real dagger in the back at that point. And four or five short swing.
Yeah,
it's, you know, you're playing catch up from there. And to be fair, he started Sunday really well. He's 4 under through the first nine. And it's a funny old course, because you look at it and the front nine was much shorter than the back nine. Yet it didn't play particularly easier on either the front or the back, even though you got all of the par four of the five par fives.
What distance did it play in you?
It played it to its full length, which is just under 7.6. So, but 3.3 on the front or thereabouts, and then 4.3 on the back. So it was a massive differential between the two. But then you kind of look to see where your players are, and you know. Do you want them on the back nine, which is where all the par fives were? But they weren't. None of them were gimmies. And do you want them on the front nine, which is shorter? But then there were some trickier holes on there too. So it was a good test for the players. He came up a few short in the end, and he'd have had to have shot 62, 63, I think, to make the playoff with Paul Casey in the end on Sunday. Which, you know, for any player, that's a bit of a stretch, I guess. So, but yeah, settle for the each way place, which ended up being a full place in the end because we got 8 places each way on Guido. So
was he single digit, Casey? He was, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, there was three of them at the top where you were. Yeah, if you could have gone for any of those, then you were looking at a win-only bet. But yeah, around about 7-1, I think, somewhere in that region. But yeah, he putted well enough, didn't he, to get the job done? And you know these players, they're capable, aren't they? You know, if they go there and play well enough, they've got a different class compared to a lot of these other players.
Casey playing Wentworth?
I think he was on the list we went through yesterday. Yeah, I'd be surprised if he isn't.
That'd be a real single finger salute if he played in Germany and then didn't play in London a few weeks later.
Yeah.
Who do you think will be favourite next week? Clearly, I'm sure we'll come up with Rory McIlroy as the favourite. But Casey's going to be fairly close, isn't he? I would have thought, based on that win.
You know, John Rahm's going to be down there, you know, in terms of, you know, I don't whether these players outside of Rory are going to be single figures, I'm not sure. But, you know, there's going to be a few of them around about the 10, 12, 14 to 1 bracket, isn't there? Which is going to, as ever, going to push some of the prices out further down the list. So, it's going to be one that the bookies should be attacking as well. So you should see a lot of 7 and 8 places available next week with any luck. And hopefully we can dig out a bit of value as well as try and find the winner next week as well.
For listeners, Paul, Barry and myself will be in attendance at Wentworth on the Friday. So we'll tweet something out or we'll get some messages out there in terms of where we are on the course. If any of you are out there and would like to meet up with us, you're more than welcome. We might even buy you a Pilsner Urquell or whatever strong European lager they will have available on the course.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it, actually. The weather, long-term weather doesn't look too bad at the moment.
The
so
field
hopefully.
Looks... I can't personally remember a better BMW field, PGA field, than this. Deep, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
you've
got the three travelling Americans. Finau, Horschel and Patrick Reed, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it does look good. And, we kind of said at the start of the year when we looked at the way that the new schedule had kind of pushed a lot of these events to the back end of the year, that you'd hope to get a better field for this and for the Italian Open as well in a few weeks' time. Thankfully we're starting to see it, aren't we? Starting to see it wash through, and the benefits that these changes to the schedule have had in the European Tour. Don't forget, you're Justin Rose next week as well, so he's another one who's going to be right towards the top end of the betting. So you've got McIlroy, Rose, Rahm, Francesco Molinari as well. So there's going to be a lot of players who are in that kind of, you know, just outside the single figures. Stenson's there, yeah. Casey, as you said, Shane Lowry as well. There's a lot of players that are going to, you know, the bookies are going to want to price relatively short. Tommy Fleetwood, you're quickly going to be getting 50s and 66s on players a little bit further down the list who have, you know, a realistic and reasonable chance of making the frame, I think. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Eric Van Ruin kind of player. Would actually be at a reasonable price.
Even a player like Alex Noren, you know, you'd expect him to be a little bit further down the list this time. We know what he can do around Wentworth. So it's going to be an interesting one to try and decipher for next week, and fascinating to see what the market looks like when it comes out on Monday lunchtime or thereabouts.
Now, we alluded to it at the top of the show. The PGA Tour is back. It's in an enhanced kind of tournament mode now because they've got... We're playing this clearly the second week of September, which may have even been like the BMW Championship or something like that. It was either that or it could have been... It would be Tour Championship week. But we're effectively 2 weeks ahead of where we used to be in terms of action on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
So we've got coming up a military tribute at the Greenbrier this week. The Sanderson Farms Championship is next week, which is no longer an alternate event. It's a full 500 FedEx Cup point event.
Should be a better field then.
Potentially. Although it looks like it's by far the weakest purse. Safeway Open, Shriners, Houston Open. So you've got the Greenbrier and the Houston that have come over from May and from June, and they're now being played in the fall. CJ Cup, the Zozo Championship, which is this new event that's taking place in Chiba in Japan, the first ever PGA Tour event in Japan. That will feature Tiger Woods. That is the week before the HSBC Champions, which takes place October the 31st, which is being run in tandem with a new alternate event in Bermuda, the Bermuda Championship. Mm. We have lost the CIMB Classic, which used to be played in Kuala Lumpur. That is no more. And then after that, things start to calm down with the Mayakoba Golf Classic in Playa del Carmen, and then the RSM Classic on Sea Island. So, by my reckoning, what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 more weeks of golf on the PGA Tour.
Yep, will take us all up to, say, the third week of November. So. Mm.
Little rest for the wicked.
Yep, then the President's Cup after that, I guess. And then straight back into it in the new year.
Be fascinating to see, as you said, if the Sanderson Farms actually gets a slightly better field on the basis that it isn't an alternate event this year.
Yeah. So the player's going to have to include this on their schedule from the rules at some point over the next, 4 years? The players have to play each of these events. So you'd expect some people to start turning up to these events, I guess.
Absolutely. And these tournaments are absolutely crucial for the rank and file PGA Tour pro who, if they can fill their boots and get a top five, top seven finish in, a couple of these relatively small events this side of Christmas, they're in a very nice scenario in terms of locking up a 125 spot on the FedEx Cup standings.
Yeah. Get it done.
And it's interesting. Well, we were talking about it last week. The likes of Wee Kim's lost his card, and Harris English didn't get full playing privileges. And there's quite a list of players in that bracket. They're all playing this week because the field is weak. Yeah. It's a big field and it's weak. And I think the PGA Tour are making sure that they're looking after their rank and file members to give them as many opportunities as they can at this time of the year before the better fields come early in 2020.
Yeah, they've got no chance of making those fields, have they? So, got to make hay while the sun's still shining at the back end of this year.
So we have the aptly titled A Military Tribute at the Greenbrier this week, which I think basically means that the tournament hasn't got a sponsor. We've got plenty of course history here. It's the old white TPC. It's a par 70. It's played in West Virginia, in White Sulphur Springs, which is a very nice holiday resort, spa town, where plenty of the rich and famous have got holiday homes. Mm. I think Phil Mickelson's got a spot here, although he's not playing. Bubba Watson certainly has, and he is playing. I think even Roger Federer might use it as a American base when he's playing tennis over in the States.
Okay.
It's that kind of place where you've got Gucci and plenty of Ralph Lauren stores on the high street rather than Kmart, I'd have thought.
Plenty of money.
Yeah, plenty of cash.
Sloshing about.
Sloshing around, yeah. It's also at altitude, Paul.
Hmm.
2,000 feet in the Appalachian Mountains. So the ball does travel further here. Worthy of note.
Yeah.
And you can see some corresponding links to players that have done well here, and they play well in places like Phoenix, where they are faced with the same issue. Reno Tahoe being another one, where that's being played in the desert, of course, at altitude. Yeah. So the ball travels further, and that does upset a few who can't work out the calculations or aren't comfortable with that kind of style of play. Key tracks that link into this, I think there are definite links to a number. I mentioned earlier the CIMB Classic in Kuala Lumpur. And if you look at Kevin Na, he won this last year, his second PGA Tour victory. In 2018, he's finished second and third in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
If you look at Xander, Xander has finished third in Kuala Lumpur. Even Danny Lee is a top seven there. So there's a definite link between Kuala Lumpur, which is a short 7,000-yard par 72 tree-lined over in Malaysia and here. And I can see that. This is a classical golf course. It's an old McDonald and Rayner desire. It's a 34-36 split. So the front nine doesn't have a par five. The back nine has both par fives. It's not overly long by modern standards. It's not overly onerous as well. Very wide fairways. This is worthy of note. You know, we've clearly been playing on some pretty nice tracks of late on the tour. You know, East Lake for the Tour Championship, Medina. Medina was a long, long golf course, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At 300 yards, the fairways at Medina number three were 28 yards wide.
Yeah.
Now, Old White TPC, 7-2 in distance. 300-yard point off the tee, 34 yards wide. So we're adding 6 yards in width over Medina. We're also adding 9 yards in width over East Lake.
Yeah. It will feel a lot wider. But yeah, of the players who played those tracks, it will certainly feel wider.
Greens are quite chunky as well. So we're getting closer to 7,300 yards. It's 7,292 on the card. But we're looking at 6,500 square feet greens, which for a par 70 is quite chunky.
Yeah.
You look at somewhere like Colonial, that number's closer to 4,000, or somewhere like Harbour Town.
Yeah, I guess it's a resort course fundamentally, isn't it? Or used as a resort course in terms of its general use outside of the outside of this particular event. So it needs to be not too punishing for the average hacker who turns up and plays the track, I guess.
I think what you find here as well is that even if you're mid-pack in terms of your greens and regulation numbers, like Kevin Na was last year, he was 34 for GIR. He still made 53 of 72 greens. So if you're making over 50 greens and you are a phenomenal putter, it opens up a whole world of opportunities.
Yeah, you're going to have plenty of putts for birdie, aren't you? Just got to make enough of them.
In my preview, which clearly is linked to within the description box in the podcast, for me, it's a golf course that doesn't overly punish the crooked off the tee. So poor drivers can perform well here. You've also got a scenario where if you're not the best ball striker in the world, you can be making enough greens to be making enough birdies with your excellent putting to really become a feature. And when we look at key statistics here, as we do on every tournament, what's absolutely crystal clear here is that looking at just the old traditional stats, you know, the accuracy, the GIR, proximity to hole, blah blah blah, scrambling, or if you look at the new strokes gain stats, the number that jumps out at you, which is absolutely critical, is that the winner here since 2010 has had an average putting average number of 6th. And if you take 15, 17 and 18, the last three renewals here on strokes gain merits, the only number that's really jumping out is strokes gain putting, where that number is an average of 5th. You have to have a red-hot putter to win this golf tournament.
Yeah. What do you think is the winning score, roughly, is likely to be?
There is no wind forecast at all. I'm talking single-digit gusting, yeah?
Yeah.
So very, very light breeze. It's tranquil. The word you use in your previews, Paul, benign.
Yeah.
I must start using that more. I think we could see 18 under last year. Now, last year, the greens got a little bit crusty, a little bit firm, but then it was only 24, 25 degrees in temperature. This year, we've got humid conditions. We've got temperatures up to 30 degrees Celsius. They are going to have to be forced to water the greens. So watered greens, we've got firm and fast fairways because there hasn't been a lot of rain in the area.
Yep.
And we are going to have soft, receptive greens and no wind. I think this could be I reckon this could be over 20 under.
Yeah, and on a par 70.
Even on a par 70. Even on a par 70 with only 8 looks at par 5s.
Yeah. See, par 4 scoring is going to have to be pretty strong this week as well.
Now, I just want to bring to the party here, I have added, you know, I've run for a considerable chunk of time now, an 8-week tracker of key statistics. I've now added strokes gained into that mix.
Very, very impressive.
So that's well worth looking into because, you know, we all look at the PGA Tour website, we look at season-long statistics, you get a view of a player. It's not so easy to get a view of how players are doing in terms of in the last 8 weeks across specific skill sets, and that's what this allows. So just to be up to speed, this goes back to the Barbasol Championship, which was played alongside the Open. Clearly, no strokes gained information at the Open to mere individuals like ourselves. But if I just take the key stats here, strokes gained off the tee, Jason Kokrag is number one in that particular ranking. Strokes gained approach, you might be surprised, that's DJ Traham. Strokes gained around the green, Brandon Grace. Strokes gained tee to green, Benny Ann and Sean Stephanie are joint top on that particular category. Strokes gained putting, Patton Kizzire. And strokes gained total, I don't think anyone would have guessed this, Josh Teeter. Bearing in mind there's been a couple of alternate events in there, hasn't there?
And yeah, yeah.
You know, these numbers will change and they'll mix. It'll be very interesting to see how those numbers change throughout the season. It's a lot of work, takes a lot of time, but it's something that's, you know, with the guys, you know, with strokes gained now so important on the PGA Tour and going to have growing significance on the European Tour now that they're collecting the same information on the European Tour. It's a step forward for us in terms of strokes gained information. That's all available in this week's betting preview.
Yeah, as you say, it'd be fascinating to see how that changes because it is just a short term kind of trend. So these players that you wouldn't expect to be, I mean, the one that stuck out to me just as you were reading through that, strokes gained putting, fifth, Ryan Armour. Now, Ryan Armour isn't a putter by any stretch of the imagination, but if his short term putting strokes gained is starting to trend in a positive direction, that can give you a little look at a, you know, potential nugget a little bit further down the list.
This is a putting contest, yeah? So I might as well take the time. Kizzire is at one. This is the top ten of strokes gained putting in the last 8 weeks. Billy Hurley, two. Bill Haas at three. Mm. Peter Uihlein, we know he's a streaky putter. Five, Ryan Armour, as you said. Six is Sebastian Munoz, who I think will be popular this week. Seven, Sung Jae Im. He's tied with Roger Sloan. Nine, Alex Checker. And 10, Austin Cook, who we know is a prestigious putter. Clearly, I don't know who's advising Wyndham Clark, but this place, when I was just going through this and just looking at this tournament, the name Wyndham Clark was just jumping out and banging me with a slab of concrete over the front of the forehead. And guess what? He's not playing.
He's not even in the list.
Not even in the field when it came out on Saturday. I could not believe it.
He's working on his tan somewhere, Steve. He obviously doesn't need the money.
Brant Snedeker just makes you, whether he doesn't like playing at altitude, that could be a reason, I suppose. But I was surprised not to see Wyndham Clark here. Not overly straight off the tee, not the best of ball strikers, although it's been improving. But by God, that guy can putt.
Yeah.
This place would be perfect for him. Okay. The other angle I've looked at here, this is clearly the first tournament that they play post-tour championship. And I just looked historically at what kind of winners we've had of this first event post-tour championship.
Yeah.
So bearing in mind 2010 through 2013, they classified this as the full series. We had Haas 22-1, Bill. Kevin Na 60-1, 2011. 12 was Ryan Moore at 14s. 2013 was Jimmy Walker's first ever PGA Tour victory at 30-1. I was on him that week. Sangmoo Bay was 150-1 in 2014. And then 15, Griot at 50s. 16, Brendan Steele at 50s. Brendan Steele again in 17 at 33s. and Kevin Tway last year at the Safeway Open, Silverado, 66-1. So no rank outsiders there, and only one of the winners has been in the triple-digit category. Just an angle there, which kind of positioned me where I want it to be. Also, none of the winners of this first tournament have been outside the world's top 200. The last, Bay was 195, Kevin Tway last year was 138. Everyone else... kind of around that area where if you had a good end to the season, you could get into the world's top 50.
Yeah. I was just looking at the numbers earlier. 44th was the lowest, up to 89th. Yeah. So as you say, these players who've got any kind of aspiration of hitting the top 50 by the end of December, it's a decent place to get off to a decent start for the season, isn't it? Get that OWGR ranking moving in the right direction for these guys.
You've also got quite a few Tour Maidens winning both this tournament, but also that first tournament after the Tour Championship.
Yeah.
So Jimmy Walker was a maiden. Griot was a maiden. He hasn't really gone on from there, has he, Griot? And also last year, Kevin Tway was a maiden. So I think that angle is quite important. And actually, if we look at the betting market this week, let's start widening it. You know, you've got Bryson DeChambeau, favourite at 12-1. Next up is Jason Kokrag, who's been backed in from 20s. He's a Tour maiden. Our good friend Victor Hovland, who's got himself a full PGA Tour card after some very nice performances, but no wins on the Korn Ferry Tour. Best price you'll get on him, I can see him as short as 10-1, Victor Hovland.
That's mad.
Wow.
He's a talented lad, absolutely. That's a short price, isn't it?
We then jump. I was surprised to see Leishman at 33-1 on first show with William Hill.
Yeah.
He's actually been lengthened by Ladbrokes to 28. I think that's a great price for someone that's in the top 25 in the world. In such a weak event. But we've then got the likes of Joakim Niemann, Sung Jae Im, Bubba Watson plays, although what I've described in terms of a putting contest doesn't really shout Bubba to me. You've then got the likes of Benny Ann, Scotty Scheffler, who's been playing outstanding on the Korn Ferry. You've also got the likes of Harold Varner. You've got Bronson Bagoon. And another Tour maiden that I came very, very close to selecting, but I just don't think he's quite got the putting ability to be able to actually carry out the victory, is Joel Damon.
Yeah. Cropped up on a few of the stats I was looking at, Joel.
Yeah, if you were looking at maidens that are likely to win, I'd probably mention most of them. Did I mention Benny Ann as well? Benny Ann plays. Yeah. Now, Benny Ann isn't the greatest of putters, but he's due as well a tour victory soon, isn't he? He must be. He's been knocking on the door. The Wyndham was the last time he came very close, wasn't it, Benny Ann?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of players in the mix. You could even go to the likes of Bo Hosler. I wouldn't be surprised if you mentioned him later on in the piece. A bit of Bo Hosler. An absolute putting diva.
Yeah.
So there's plenty in this field that you could describe as, you know, you wouldn't be overly surprised if they grabbed their first maiden victory this week.
No.
It's that kind of tournament. As I said, I went very close on Joel Damon. I'm just giving you a short list of players that I actually striked off my short list. I also came very, very close on a very streaky putter who has been playing some nice stuff recently, Andrew Landry, who's another that I think could just pop up
and potentially
grab a victory. He's already a PGA Tour winner, isn't he?
He did. He won at a big price as well, didn't he?
But Valero Texas Open.
Yeah, that's right.
Last year,
getting over the line, isn't he?
Absolutely. They're two that I came very, very close with. Landry and also Joel Damon. Now, I've got a feeling this week that there's going to be some very popular players in terms of these maidens. Kokrag's going to be popular. Joachim Niemann's going to be very popular. I went for a different player, though, in terms of the maiden that I think could, at the top end, that could go and win this. I've gone for Sungjae Im, who, you know, when you look at statistics and when you read other views out there, people say that Im's putting traditionally is one of the weaker segments of his game. But actually, based upon those 8 week numbers that I read out, Sungjae Im is in the top 10 in terms of strokes gained putting.
Yeah,
he sits in seventh. He sits ninth in strokes gained tee to green. And in terms of strokes gained total, he sits third. Bearing in mind that Im has played the Wyndham Championship, he's played the Northern Trust, he's played the BMW Championship and the Tour Championship. Three huge tournaments there, featuring the best players in the world.
Yeah, decent fields, aren't they? He's put some decent showing in.
Kokrag is at two, Sungjae Im is at three. So, and Benny Ann is at four in that particular statistic. So I've gone for Im because I think that Sungjae is likely to get his first PGA Tour victory very, very soon.
Yeah, sooner rather than later.
I think so. You know me as well, Paul. I've been very sweet on Joachim Niemann for a long time, since he came onto the scene last year, you know, when he got that eighth at Fort Worth and sixth at Memorial. He was sixth at the Texas Open and didn't have any status on tour. He's a very, very clinical player. But I've sided with Im this week because I just think Im, if you compare Im and Niemann, I think Im has had more experience of actually being in the line of fire on a Sunday afternoon.
Mm.
And sometimes that's gone badly for him. Other times he's hung around and he's, you know, finished third, finished fourth. And I just think that might be a slight differentiator over Niemann, who has had a couple of top fives this year. But actually, when you look at his, where he started the Sunday, he's normally been off the pace and just shoots a very low round.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Joachim right in the white heat of battle this week and see how he copes with it.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him, as you say, in the mix going into the Sunday rather than just producing this kind of off-the-pace Sunday effort, which gives him a nice-looking finish. But actually, was he really in the mix? Yeah. Be a nice test for him.
It will also be interesting to see how Victor gets on this week, because he clearly, from tee to green, is probably the class of the event.
Yeah.
It's the putter that lets Victor down. Mm. Whether he has gained confidence with that putter at the two Corn Ferry starts that he's had, because if he puts well this week, I think Hovland probably wins.
Yeah.
At those short prices, I can't. It's not for me. Not for me at all. So Sungjae Im, and the other one at the top of the market that I thought was far too prominent on my statistics, and just from a logical perspective, you think to yourself, well, actually, by the way, with Im fighting with the likes of Benny Ann for a President's Cup captain pick, that's a big critical point
now, isn't it?
Yeah, they've got the, was it four or five, they've got 5 weeks up until the cut-off at the HSBC champion?
Yeah, WGC,
So you've got Niemann in the mix for that, haven't you? You've got Ben Ann, you've got Brandon Grace, who's going to have to fight for a pick. You've got Erik van Rooyen on the European Tour. There's a long list of players. You know, there's Jazz Jane Wattenand, quite a few internationals. Even Adam Hadwin.
Yeah.
Fighting for those places.
And there's a few of them that the likes of Grace has been out of form, largely out of form for a while now. So he's
horribly.
Not
you would assume that Ernie Els will be looking for any flicker of form from Brandon Grace and he'll be in the two.
Yeah, again, he did pop up very briefly on a few of the little stats that I looked at this week. But you look at his overall form, I couldn't pull the trigger on him. So,
do you know what shocked me about Brandon Grace?
Gone.
Current OWGR position, 82nd.
Is he?
Started the year 49th.
Yeah, that's not good for him, is it?
No.
You know, again, he's still only one decent win away from getting back into that top 50, but he's not showing the kind of form that suggests it's imminent, really, is he?
When you're seeing Brandon Gray's top of strokes gained around the green and nowhere else, that kind of tells you that he's spending quite a lot of time not on the green.
Yeah, that's... I think that's probably where he popped up on the stats I looked at, because I think it was probably the putter which had improved, which kind of got me a little bit interested. But, Brandon Grace has got much more game than that, and overall he's just not been there, is it?
What is clear is that Brandon Grace will need to be playing lots of golf. Mm. Now, whether he chooses to do that on the in America or whether he chooses to do that on the European Tour, I'm not sure. I don't recall his name being on the Wentworth list.
He's playing Wentworth.
Oh, he is playing Wentworth.
Yeah,
he is. Okay. So he's got to play plenty of golf to clearly get Ernie Els's President's Cup pick.
Exactly. And if he plays some of these bigger European Tour events, then, you know, he's got to go well at them. But they've got enough clout, haven't they, as events to see him rise up the OWGR list for a start and raise his head above the parapet in terms of Els, as you say.
So I've gone for him. The player I was describing was Mark Leishman.
Yeah.
And I had a tweet last night. I had a very good tweet. I will read out the guy's name in a minute once I found it. But he said to me that he'd seen a very close link in terms of course correlation between both Kuala Lumpur, which I mentioned at the top of the show, the top of the piece rather, but also with Riviera, which is the event they play in Los Angeles. It's Jack Hawkins, at Nose for the Job on Twitter, a keen punter and a keen DraftKings player. He said, good luck, Steve. I'm big on Leishman this week. There, think there could be a CIMB link with the last three winners. Also Genesis, so Riviera. That form interests me with Nar Zander. And if you look at Mark Leishman, a winner last year in Kuala Lumpur, and also a couple of top five finishes at Genesis, the Riviera. And as we've seen, trends do change. Yes, his OWGR actually doesn't fit in with the numbers we were talking at earlier. But he's 24th in the official World Golf rankings. And if you actually look at his last three outings on the start after the FedEx Cup playoffs, he's finished... Let me get this out. Fifth at the 2016 CIMB, second at the 2017 CJ Cup, and first at the 2018 CIMB Classic. This is his kind of time of year.
Mm. Biorhythms and all that.
Those last two wins have come at 23 under and 26 under. And actually, I think to myself, a guy that sits in the top 20 of my rolling GIR number for 8 weeks, so he's hitting lots of greens. He's very crooked off the tee, so that's not a factor here. So hitting tons of greens, and we just know he's a streaky, very strong putter who is just as effective on bent grass or Bermuda grass. Pure greens, he's an absolute diva of a putter. I can also see a link here, believe it or not, with Augusta, because Kevin Na's got a couple of top 12s at Augusta. Xander Schauffele, second this year at Augusta. We've got Angel Cabrera, who's won this in 2014.
Yeah.
Jonas Blix won here in 2013. Well, Jonas Blix finished runner-up.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
To Jordan Spieth at Augusta a few years ago. And Mark Leishman, we know, has come a couple of decent top five finishes at Augusta over the years. So I can see that with Leishman as well. So I've gone at the top end, 2 points each way, both on Leishman at 25s. There is a little bit of 28 out there now. And Sung Jae Im at 28. If you were having a bet at the towards the top end of the market, Paul, was there any name that jumped out on you?
The one I said to you right at the start when I was pulling together some of the stats for the predictor model this week was Mark Leishman. I think statistically he's the closest fit to this particular event. And as you say, in terms of putting, he's a very capable putter, and the bio rhythms all seem to fit as well. I haven't had a punt down that part of the market, but he was the one who stuck out the most. So yeah, I think you're likely to be on the right kind of path there with Leishman.
In my mind, I don't think Leishman will be sitting on his hands just waiting for the season to peter out. He hasn't had a win this year. And also, again, as we keep saying, the President's Cup is in December in Australia. He will want to be hitting his straps arriving at that event. It's going to be very important to him. He's at Royal Melbourne. It's going to be important for him to put on a very, very strong show. Effectively, you can't call it a major, but you know, it'll be the biggest event that's happened in Australia in terms of golf for a long, long time. He won't want to end up getting trashed at the President's Cup and taking home no points, will it?
No. I can see him having a decent autumn for that very reason. So yeah, I fully understand how and why you've gone down that route. So we shall see.
I think if Bryson plays the way he did at the Tour Championship, you could see him walking this as well. I just still think with Bryson, all of the furore about the pace of play and the whole antics that kicked off in the FedEx Cup playoffs might have just slightly derailed his equilibrium a little bit. So I stayed away from that. If Hovland putts well, I think he's going to be a huge factor as well. Triple digit punts, I've got a couple of those as well. A guy that's very, very quiet, but actually he's playing some really nice golf at the moment, is an individual by the name of Adam Schenk. I've got him a point each way, 100-1, with eight places each way available with Paddy Power. And Schenk has finished sixth at the John Deere Classic, 18th at the Barbasol, and 24th at the Northern Trust in his last four outings.
Damn.
Hails from Indiana, which basically is just a few hundred miles to the west of West Virginia. 43rd for birdie average last season, 33rd for strokes gained putting, and 10th for putts from 15 to 20 feet. A key converting distance. He's absolutely fantastic from 15 to 20 feet. I think Schenk could be the kind. He had three top seven finishes last year, Jackson Country Club all last season, TPC San Antonio, and that John Deere Classic finish of sixth, which I think Schenk's the kind that he absolutely gives me a full house statistically, both in terms of the birdies that he can produce and that all-round strong putting, strokes gained putting, and those distance putts that I'm looking for, key converting distances. So Schenk had to go in for me. And the last one, which is a bit more of a... As I was writing up the tip, as you know, Paul, he was 200-1 in a place, and I just absolutely loved the price. That got swallowed up about 10 minutes before we went live. So in the end, I went eight places each way, again with Paddy Power, 50 odds, at 125s with He's On Fire, Patton Kizzire, who again is showing something, I think.
Yeah, 34th at the... good putter.
Well, 34th at the 3M Open. He started with an opening 6 under 65. He closed with the 5 under 66. Then he went on to the John Deere Classic, where he shot 5 under 65 and then a 6 under... that should be a 5 under 66, by the way. 5 under 66 and a 6 under 65 to be third going into the weekend at the John Deere Classic. And one thing we know about Kizzire is from January through to about September, he doesn't do a lot on the PGA Tour. But throw him in August or January in Hawaii or somewhere like that, or on the West Coast, he gets results. There's a whole list of results, like at second at Summerlin, fourth at Summerlin, second at Silverado, where he's come from absolutely nowhere and played really nicely. And of course, first at Mayakoba and first at the Sony Open in 2017 and 2018. This kind of resort-style test where he can shoot anything 17, 18, 19 under, I just think Kizzire fits, as we know, putting lights out. He can hit, if he can hit anywhere over 70, 72% of GIR this week, he could be a real player that can get in the mix, I think, Patton Kizzire. And there are signs that something is boiling with him. A talented individual, I think, Kizzire. So I've gone Kizzire, Schenk, and then at the shorter prices, Im and Mark Leishman. Who are you gone for at a big price?
I think you've mentioned all of the players that I've fancied. I've backed two, actually. I have backed Joel Damon, you and I haven't discussed it, but for pretty much the same reasons that you ran through before, and kind of eventually scrubbed him off your list. But I've given him a chance. I took 90-1 with five places. Yeah, there are some much shorter prices about him. He's as short as 50-1 in places. And if you're going for extended each-way places, you're probably only going to get 66s at best. But I've been a bit greedy. Gone for 90s, taken five places and see how he gets on. But fifth here last year, third for Greens in regulation last year, 81.9%. So clearly from his approach play, it suited his eye. And there have been signs recently he's getting... his iron's back up to speed. At the BMW Championship, his iron play looks really strong. Third after day one with a 66. He shot 67 and 69 the week after. 65 to open, or the week before rather, at the Northern Trust. 65 to open at the Wyndham Championship before that as well. So there's just these snippets of decent form and decent rounds that he's popping in every now and again. I'll also be interested to see what price I can get on the first round leader market with him as well.
Yeah,
he's been first round leader three times already this season.
Yeah, and he fired this at the BMW, didn't he? Top, that's I think right. He got an each way spot in the first round.
Yeah, it was third off of day one. Yeah, he was 66. Yeah. He shot, three times in 2019, he's been the outright first round leader. There's only three or four firms up with prices at the moment, and 66s is the best, but. If we get north of that and when the tee times come out, that might be a market to have a play with.
Yeah, he's with a very Joel good Damon. First round leader chance. So I'm with you on that 100%.
A few others that caught my eye. Harry Higgs, who looks like a decent putter, won the Price Cutter on the Corn Ferry a few weeks back, 125-1. Grayson Murray, he's shown some good progressive form on the Corn Ferry as well, same price, 125s. Brendan Todd, who was second a few weeks back and has got some decent form in this event as well. But the one I have backed, and again, you alluded to it and guessed before we've even discussed it. Bo Hostler, 100-1. I couldn't not take Bo Hostler on a track that's going to appeal to the better putters out there. 100-1, I thought, was well worth the risk. I mean, so far... he's been runner-up five times in the respective tours that he's played and competed in so far. Twice on the PGA Tour in recent times at the Travelers Championship behind Bubba. He lost that playoff to Ian Poulter at Houston, you'll remember. And that was only where Poulter absolutely... the putter just absolutely went mad, didn't it? He was just making everything.
Oh yeah, he should be a PGA Tour victor, really.
Yeah, he should have been. Should have been, absolutely. But he is an excellent putter, and he's second again recently to Scottie Scheffler at the Nationwide Championship last month. So he's in some decent form as well. And I thought for 100-1 with a player that seems to fit the bill, I'll give that a stab this week. But yeah, they're the two off back, Joel Damon and Bo Hostler, with the. One eye on what the first round leader market looks like.
I won't put anybody off either of those. I had a very serious stare at Damon. And the fact of the matter is here, Keegan Bradley's, we've also got the likes of Damon last year, as you said, Harold Varner the third. You've got Xander. I mean, to be fair, he's just elite class, elite ball striker and elite putter as well. But you do, Jamie Lovemark, you do get... strong ball strikers that can also compete around it, but ultimately they get just pipped by a better putter on the weekend.
I noticed that he putted in the kind of 1.7s for his last couple of starts, which if his ball striking his greens are, you know, as strong as they possibly can be, then that may be close to good enough. He's going to have to putt better than normal, but yeah. Given that he finished top five last year, I thought it was worth a stab. And as I say, first round leader could be the trick as well. We shall see.
Right, KLM Open.
Off to
your assignment for the week.
Indeed, another new track to contend with, the International. Actually, we've got a few new tracks coming up over the next few weeks. We've got the Wentworth and Dunhill Links the next 2 weeks, which we know about. Then the Spanish Open, but it's not a new track. It goes back to the Club de Campo in Madrid, which hasn't been played, by my estimation, since 1996. And then off to Rome the week after for the Italian Open, which Ian Poulter last won on that track back in 2002. So there's going to have to be some archives dug through once we've got through Wentworth and the Dunhill Links. But some good events certainly coming up on the European tour over the next few weeks. But yeah, this week, the assignment is the International. It was used for the Dutch Senior Open in 2013 and 14. It's only opened in 2012. 2013, Simon Brown won at 3 under in a very heavily weather-affected tournament that got cut down just 2 rounds for the seniors. Ian Woosnam, who designed the course, won the year after in 2014, 11 under over 3 rounds. And just reading through, I mean, we've got very little to go on, as you know, with the European Tour, particularly with events that are new. The detail and data and analysis is sparse.
Patchy?
Patchy, yeah. I'm trying to think of some polite words to use for it. You're trying to dig as many small snippets of information out as you possibly can. But going back to those two events and reading some of the interview transcripts from the players who played in those senior opens, they described it as a tough track. Both times it was played in tough, windy conditions, even more so in 2013 when it eventually got cut down to 2 rounds, as I say. But generally, I think it's going to be one of these layouts that's going to be more kind of open to the weather and to weather affected or not weather affected, as the case may well be this year. But yeah, if you're trying to dig through, trying to find some stats to help you this week, then good luck to you. And the course itself, as I said, is a Woosnam design. It sits next to Amsterdam Airport, and it's listed as a par 73 at 6,966 yards, which is particularly short for a track in modern times anyway, let alone a par 73. I take all of that with a pinch of salt. We've seen a lot of new events or new tracks listed on the European Tour that then have something very different as their actual playing, how they actually played in the end. This is actually how it played for the seniors, 73-6966. So we shall see how it actually pans out. If it is that and plays as it's described, then it has 5 par 5s of between 506 and 559 yards, so all relatively short. 5 more sub 400 yard par 4s, but yeah, I don't put all your eggs in one basket and rely on that data. I would be not in the remotest bit surprised to see a different yardage and par played this week when push comes to shove. We shall see. I mean, it's an exposed undulating track anyway. We can see what it looks like. It's wide-ish fairways, 30 to 40 yards, generally the fairways, so reasonably wide, large greens. It looks to me like a second shot course. I think you're going to be able to find fairways relatively easily. I think you need to find the right parts of fairways to give yourself the best chance of approaching these greens. And I think the greens on and around the greens are going to be the trickiest part of this test this week. Now, an exposed track in Holland, which is clearly very low in terms of the in terms of sea level anyway, it's going to be very much reliant on the weather. So these events that were played a few years back on the seniors, they were both windy. There's not a great deal of wind in the forecast this week that I can see. Thursday may get up to 15 miles an hour in the afternoon. That looks to be the peak. It looks to be dropping. And by the weekend, it's going to be sub 10 miles an hour. It's going to be dry, sunny, 70 Fahrenheit. It's probably going to be prime birdie-making period of time over the weekend. So I don't think the players are going to be describing it as particularly tough this week. I guess there's not a great deal more to go on than that. The greens are bent grass, and we know the fairways are quite wide. We know the greens are quite large and undulating. looking back at the history of the KLM Open, seven of the last winners had a top 10 in the last five starts. So coming into this event, historically, with some recent contending forms, seems to be positive. Four of the same nine had a top five finish at the KLM Open at one of its previous tracks before going on to win here. But again, you're dealing with different tracks that have been used over the last sort of 10, 15 years. The last 3 years have been played at the Dutch, which was a move from the previous venues at Hilversum and Kennema as well. So if you're looking back historically, there'll be a bit of a mix and match of venues in your history. So yeah, should you put too much reliance on those results? I'm not entirely sure you should, really. Last couple of winners have been pretty long prices. Ashen Wu, who we picked up last year, 125-1. Lovely result that was. Who'd shown a little bit of form the week before and had some kind of under-the-radar form at the KLM Open previously, and without it kind of slapping you around the face. 125-1 was a cracking result. Romain Vatel, the Frenchman, the year before, 175-1. So two long price winners over the last couple of years. But again, we've moved to a new track this year. So, you know, can you put a lot of credence in that? It's kind of the route I've gone down. For me, I think it's a week to attack the longer prices, but we shall see. What kind of player is going to win? I think there's probably two types of player. I don't think length is going to be that much of a consequence this week from off the tee. I can see that the par fives are going to be, you know, very attackable for the longer players. But, you know, if you get in a par five that's just over 500 yards, then the whole field should be having a pop at that. That shouldn't alienate anyone. And for me, it's either going to be an accurate type who can maximise their greens in regulation by plotting their way around the track, or a player who's a bit more aggressive but with a magical short game who can work out how to get up and down around these tricky surfaces and then clearly make enough putts on these bent grass greens when they get a chance to do so. I'll just go through the market very quickly and then we'll talk about the players that I've backed. Patrick Reed heads the market. It's good that actually Patrick, he stayed over again for another week, and again he's in the field for next week as well. So he's having a proper European tour stint right now. He's the favourite again, a little bit of 9-1 out there. Thomas Peters 14-1. Sergio's here 16-1. Joost Luiten 16-1, who's a couple of KLM Open titles in his pocket already. Matt Wallace, who didn't play particularly well in his last start either, 18-1. Mike Lorenzo Vera, who has been playing some nice stuff, 18-1 for Mike Lorenzo Vera. Looking at my initial early shortlist, you know, MLV, he was one of the players that was there, but I'm seeing prices.
Yeah, Barry likes him, doesn't he? Barry likes him.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and you know, had he been at a backable price, I'd have liked him this week, but I can't go close to him at 14, 16, no. A little bit of 18-1 out there. Martin Kymer, 18-1 as well. Again, as short as 12-1 in places. Lee Westwood, similar kind of price.
What's Martin Kymer shown recently to be 12-1 with Paddy Power? He couldn't even get close at the Barracuda Championship on an alternate event in the States when I tipped him up.
Yeah.
No, not for me. Hollow.
They've got to put him in a price. They want to duck him. All of the bookies have ducked him in case he does do something. But there won't be many people, I don't think, going near Martin Kymer at that kind of price. There needs to be a little bit more justification to be putting your hand in your pocket, I think. Yeah, for me, looking at the prices of the last couple of winners and the fact it's a new track and it's, you know, there's no guarantee that these top players are all going to, or any of them are going to take to the course on competitive debut. So I've gone a bit further down the list, and each of the players I've gone for, if you get an each-way place out of them, that's going to be the equivalent of getting a win only on one of the players that are kind of the top eight, top ten in the market. So we'll try and make our money back that way. And I've gone for five in total, the shortest of which, or shortest of whom, is Romain Vatel, who, as we've just discussed, is a former KLM Open winner, won in 2017, 80-1 I got on him yesterday. He's been nibbled in a little bit. There's still some prices out there with some extended places. So, first and fifth at the KLM Open the past, flanked by six missed cuts. It was very much hit or miss at this event. But you know, for a player,
he's French, Paul. He's French. None of them are consistent.
Well, there's not that many consistent players. Full stop, is there? When you look at this kind of level of event, he's inconsistent. He's struggling early season. His new coach, he rebuilt his swing. He missed a lot of cuts. 12 out of 13 cuts I counted that he missed. But then there was a spark of life at the Scottish Open. He led after the first round with a 63, ended up finishing 20th. But clearly after 13 or 12 out of 13 missed cuts, he'd been a little bit unused to the spotlight. Being asked to feature in interviews and these things that happen when you suddenly spring back to life. The Scottish Open was a step in the right direction. 14th in Prague, and then 6th last week in Hamburg. He finished with rounds of 67-64. His long game looked in great shape, and crucially for me, with someone like Wattel, he was 6th for putting. When he won a couple of years ago, he won this a couple of years ago. He'd shown some significant improvement with the putter the week before at Crown Saucier and then went on to win. And I remember listening to the interview afterwards, and he just said, basically, I've found some confidence, happy with the putting stroke, can make some putts, and, you know, hey presto, went and won the KLM Open. Last week, 6th for putting is a big step forward for Wattel. So 80-1, I was quite happy to take him on. With an each way price that will give you very similar kind of return to win bet on one of the players at the top of the market. Another four then, Jamie Donaldson's one that's caught the eye, 100-1 this week. He's again another player who's kind of gone off the boil. Some of it was self inflicted. You remember he had that chainsaw accident which laid him low for a while. He had wrist surgery earlier this year, so he's been recovering from both of those. Okay, back in the day, Jamie Donaldson was a cracking player, wasn't he? Won the Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles 2014. He hit the final shot, which we've seen replayed many a time. At that point, then he was bang in the middle of the kind of top 20 world rankings. He was a top quality player, but it's all drifted down. At one point, he was outside the top 1,000 in the world, so that shows you how far he's had to go back down to start coming back up. But
he's definitely in the ascendancy now, though, isn't he? And you just know with Donaldson that when he's going to be contending and getting in contention like he has been of late, he's the kind that will and can get over the line.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a three-time European Tour winner.
I like this tip a lot.
Yeah, it's certainly been some positive signs. And again, listening to some of his interviews, when he came back from the most recent wrist surgery, he wasn't able to swing 100%. He was kind of feeling his way back into his game. There's some swing changes that he'd been working through. And it all started to click. 9th at the Scottish Opens when it started to really start to come together. He shot 63 in one of his rounds in Sweden. He opened with 65 at Crans Saucier on his last start. I think coupled with the form that's clearly improving, his ball striking's improving, he's talked about how his game actually is in a much better shape and place than the results that have actually been written down on paper at the end of the week. So I think he feels good about his game. He's got a couple of top five finishes at the KLM Open in the past as well. So for me, as you said, for a player that you know is well capable and actually compared to a lot of this field, take the top six or eight out of the field, and there's not many better than Jamie Donaldson in terms of their overall capability. I thought 100-1 was a price that just had to be taken. Three more. Ashley Chester's at 100-1. I've backed Chester's before on tracks where I think that one of the routes to success will be, or one potential route to success is by pushing greens in regulation, accuracy, greens in regulations, accuracy. That's the type he is. He led driving accuracy at Crans Saucier. He's strong at greens in regulation in Germany on his last start. Critically, though, with Chester's, and this stat, occasionally you look at a stat and it just makes your eyebrows raise. This one, my eyebrows were nearly popping off the top of my head. 3rd for putting average. and Germany. That's his best stat as a professional. I went back through all of his data, best ever putting performance relative to the field. And that's not his game. Ashley Chesterton is not a putter, but if the putter's warm, away you go. I talked about Ash and Wu and his kind of understated form in the KLM Open coming into last year, which he went on to win. Ashley Chester's 60th and 28th. And again, like Wu last year, was top 10 going into the weekend 12 months ago. So he should feel quite comfortable in this part of the world as well. So again, 100 to 1, quite happy to take that. Padre Harrington, who is going to find that his workload changes significantly for next week as the Ryder Cup qualifying starts. But this week, I think he could be free rolling into this event. I think we've still got to give Paddy some respect. Again, he played a lot of golf over in the States. You remember he came back over on what looked to be relatively poor form a couple of years ago, and then won the Portugal Masters from absolutely nowhere. I think when he feels comfortable in the surroundings and when he feels like it's a step down in terms of class, I think he's still competitive. And I thought 125 to 1 was disrespectful, really. Again, the real work will start for Paddy next week. This qualifying campaign for the Ryder Cup for the Europeans starts at Wentworth next week and runs all the way through to Wentworth next year. So it will start and finish at the BMW PGA Championship. So it'll add a bit of spice to both next week's event and the one in a year's time as well. But clearly, what tends to happen with these Ryder Cup captains is once they get into the swing of it, their form just drops off a cliff completely. Yeah. The focus is elsewhere. The result they get in any particular event is pretty incidental. This week, there's no pressure. Everything kicks off from next week. I think he'd go out there free-rolling this week and do something quite dramatic. And going back to his old Dutch Open form, ninth and third back in the years when he used to play the European Tour quite a lot. He came over last year and finished fifth at the Dutch. 12th last week in Germany. His all-round game looked particularly solid. So I could see no reason to scrub him off my list at 125 to 1. And finally, a price that I don't tend to go quite this deep down, but I picked Matthew Nixon up at 400 to 1 yesterday for a small speculative, and I mean speculative, punt on the young Englishman who is one of these short, accurate types who actually should be well suited to this track. I mean, the problem with Nixon, the reason he's 400 to 1 is he's had a pretty terrible year. He hasn't had a top 10 actually since October last year. Currently sits outside the top 200 in the race to Dubai. So if he's going to retain his card the conventional way, he needs to put his finger out rapidly. But there have been some small signs of life. In Prague, he shot 67 on the Friday, which was amongst the best in the field on that particular day. He closed with 66-66 in Sweden the week after, which was impressive. He missed the cut last week in Germany, but he shot 68 on the Friday, which once again was amongst the very best rounds out there on the day. It was only the fact that he'd had such a terrible round the day before that meant he still missed the cut. Now, he's got a couple of top 20 finishes at the KLM Open from his last four starts, so he's clearly quite comfortable in the area. And if he's going to attempt to make his card or keep his card, he's going to have to really get moving very, very quickly. And for me, this is one of the tracks that actually suits him far better, or should on paper suit him far better than those that are coming up over the next few weeks. So he should be earmarking this as one of his real target events to go well and perform at. And yeah, 400 to 1 was the reward. It's been nibbled in a little bit again overnight, but there's still some very strong three-figure prices available for Matthew Nixon if you fancy following that one in this week. But yes, a speculative 5 this week to see how we get on. Hopefully get an each-way place or two out of them, or maybe even a winner. You never know.
I do like the Donaldson look.
Yeah.
He's the sort.
He was firmly on my list at the back end of last week before the prices came out, and I was pleasantly surprised to see a three-figure price about Jamie Donaldson, I must say. Pleasantly surprised.
He's different gravy, isn't he? You know, an ex top 25 in the world kind of player who's clearly on the ascendancy.
Yep. Moving in the right direction.
Paul, thank you for your time. Much appreciated.
Best of luck this week.
Best of luck to you. And we will be back, of course, next week for our BMW PGA Championship. We'll try and get Barry on, if at all possible, although he might be winging his way across the Irish Sea into the UK. And we'll also have the Sanderson Farms Championship on the PGA Tour. Thank you for your for listening. And if you could leave us an iTunes review, that'd be absolutely fantastic. Thank you. Goodbye.